From high atop Fox News headquarters in New York City, always seeking solutions, never sowing division. It's Brian Kilmeade.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to the latest moments of the Brian Kilmeade Show. I hope you had a fantastic weekend. Everyone's talking about the eclipse. We'll discuss that. I don't know what I can add to it. I know everyone's looking forward to it. Millions of people going to Indianapolis, Dallas, all up the path of totality. Buffalo, New York's another place, getting great advice from the governor of New York saying bring snacks and water because you're going to be stuck in traffic. That's fine. Doesn't happen that much. We'll talk about it. I just don't know how much insight I can give having turned down opportunities to work at NASA. Michael Pillsbury will be with us a little bit later today. We'll talk about the 100-year marathon, his book about China, and also about China and what they're trying to do right now by dumping just about all their products into Western countries in order to try to spur their economy. We did that once. We're not going to do it now. I think we're smarting up by that. Let's get to the big three.
Now, with the stories you need to know, it's Brian's Big Three.
Number three.
Ukraine remains a priority, as does our support for Israel and Taiwan. And yes, I believe he's fully committed to bringing it up to the floor immediately thereafter. And I think that's critical, as it should have been passed months ago.
Republican Congressman French Hill weighing in on D-Day week for Speaker Johnson as he efforts to do the right thing and get Ukraine aid to Zelensky before he falls to Russia while keeping his job, because Marjorie Taylor Greene and others want to challenge him. What should the deal look like? What should he be extracting from Joe Biden, who can't afford to lose another conflict on his watch?
Number two.
The president, again, was clear. I won't get ahead of him, Margaret. I won't prejudge decisions he will or won't make.
I haven't heard from him on this. If he feels so strongly, why isn't the president out there talking about this?
You saw his statement after
I read a paper statement.
These people are so fed up with Israel and the president now not talking about anything ever. Israel sees enemies all around. Now widespread American support begins to wobble. Loss of perspective by American media and a chant of death to America and Michigan for its support tells it all. We'll push back on this show.
Number one.
My view is now that we have abortion where everybody wanted it from a legal standpoint, the states will determine by vote or legislation or perhaps both. And whatever they decide must be the law of the land. In this case, the law of the state.
A former president of the United States speaking out on abortion says, leave it to the states. 2024, two big announcements today for both Biden and Trump. You just heard Trump. He just weighed in there. He also weighed in with $50 million raised in one dinner at Mar-a-Lago on Saturday. We talk about that and the big announcement from Joe Biden. And we'll do that now. So Joe Biden's big announcement is he's going to forgive more student loan debt. It's insane because, yeah, you might please some people, I guess, 25 to 35. But what about the people that are done paying off their loans? What about the Supreme Court decision that says you can't do that? Does that even matter? I mean, he said, so he is taking great pleasure in going around the system. I don't know if it's legal or not. To me, Supreme Court makes a decision, do something else. If you think that college is too expensive, great idea. Let's attack that. If you believe that the interest rates are too high, I have a perfect solution for you. If you want to help students who maybe got predatory loans or parents who got these parent loans to go to an $80,000 school, even though they probably make $100,000 as a family a year, what you do is go in there and cut that interest rate instead of forcing all of America to suffer and have to pay off your debt. It's a terrible message. What about school? What about mortgage? Just let's forgive mortgages. There's a deal. When you take out a loan, you pay it back. If not, they foreclose or you redo the deal. You work it out. I remember when I had a student loan, when I moved out to California, I could not pay the $126 a month. So what I did is I got a year and a half stall, basically, on the loan. When it came back, I added another $30 to the payment. But for a year and a half, I was able to get my feet underneath me. But not for a minute did I think it would be forgiven. It makes no sense. So the big announcement from the president came off too social. Here's what he said about his big announcement on abortion. Keep in mind, we watched what happened in 2020 and 2022. Abortion was a big deal. Why? Because a lot of these states were going for 0 weeks and a lot of the state referendums pushed back. Kansas, Ohio, and now Florida this month and other places. People coming out, Republicans and Democrats, saying, I want some type of 5 weeks or 13 weeks or 15 weeks. And when they came out in droves, Republicans paid the price because Roe v. Wade was overturned. The pro-life movement got what they wanted, but they didn't have a plan to talk about it. So this is Trump's plan. Cut six.
My view is now that we have abortion where everybody wanted it from a legal standpoint, the states will determine by vote or legislation or perhaps both. And whatever they decide must be the law of the land. In this case, the law of the state. Many states will be different. Many will have a different number of weeks, or some will have more conservative than others, and that's what they will be. At the end of the day, this is all about the will of the people. You must follow your heart or, in many cases, your religion or your faith.
All right, so that's what he brought up. It goes about 4 minutes long. He talks about how proud he was to overturn Roe v. Wade, that it was bad legislation. So work it out with the states. I thought he was going to come out with weeks, but that would have alienated the pro-life movement. And the president's running, really tapping into the Christian audience, many of which do not buy that unless you're Joe Biden. He is pro-choice, evidently now, wasn't all the time. So where is President Biden's support waning most? Well, for the most part, it's kids under 50, kids, people under 30 years old. He is now at 50% as of March 24th, according to the Wall Street Journal poll. That number is decent, not if you consider where it was in 2020. It was at 61%. So he's, the way to do that and win these guys over and these women over is to forgive their debt. And he's done it. He's gotten 4 million people. Basically said, don't pay back your student loans. He's canceled debt for borrowers who enrolled in low financial value programs. He's canceled debt for borrowers experiencing hardship with their daily lives. He canceled debt for borrowers who entered repayment 20 plus years ago if they got undergraduate loans. Now, I don't know the answer to this. What about now? You're 19 years old. You're sophomore or junior. You've already had 2 years of loans and maybe parent loans too to go to a place like Tufts, Harvard, Dartmouth. Do you have to pay that back? Is that fair that you have to pay that? Well, you have to pay it back. Oh, you do. Okay, so you have to pay it back, but this other generation doesn't have to pay it back. How does that make any sense? So if you want to know how expensive college is, this is what you should attack. Why are these private colleges getting any federal money at all? If they're doing some studies that help the federal government and they're financing it, maybe we talk about it. But Tufts College is now $95,888 a year. Wellesley College is $92,000 a year. Brown, $91,000. Yale, $90,000. I don't know many middle class to working class people that can afford that. Oh, I get that $90,000 out of our passbook savings. Billy's got to go to Yale. You know, technically there's academic scholarships, but just to get into Yale, you're probably the top of your class, let alone get an academic scholarship. Plus, these colleges have such endowments. How does Tufts get away with $95,000? How invaluable is a liberal arts education? So what happens is you go to a state school in New York. Well, for example, in Florida, you establish residency. I think you go for free. Same thing in California. In New York, same thing. I mean, you go for half that. I mean, a third of that. That's what you have to do. But if you take out two loans to go to a school like that, why should I pay it back? Why should you pay it back? So now Gen Z is enrolling in trade jobs, a 16% increase in vocational jobs, 23% increase in construction job, 7% increase in HVAC or vehicle repair. So people say, well, I can't afford it, or is it really worth it? Let me take a deep breath and look around. So that's what the president's going to do. He is going to bribe the next generation. To me, it's crazy. I don't know why that's acceptable. I don't get it. So we'll discuss that. And I want to get into Israel, too. And then at the bottom of the hour, talk about China. But over the weekend, the president got $50 million. I love the banner at the bottom of CNN this morning at 4 a.m. when I'm at work getting ready for Fox and Friends. It says, Donald Trump says he raises $50 million. Okay. It's okay for Joe Biden to raise $25 million with Bill Clinton and Barack Obama. But Donald Trump says he raised $50 million. Doug Burgum, who is a contender to be the vice president, governor of North Dakota, said this about the event. Cut one.
Well, certainly it was a night of unification, a night of support. In some ways, it's the official kickoff of this campaign. And among the donors, there was people there that have known President Trump for 30, 40, 50 years. There's people that have come into the fold more recently, but they're all united. And, of course, Laura Trump and the RNC, Michael Watney there last night, the coordination between the Trump campaign and the RNC, giving people confidence that when they're investing, that it's going to help drive towards victory in the fall. And it was in that sense, it was also inspirational because I think that there's a real unification of the party around what needs to happen in November.
So Trump and the RNC have ended March with $93 million cash in hand, $65 million in March alone. And then you add this off in April. It's a good start. The president's going to be in Atlanta, I think, today, raising more money. Biden, the DNC, ended March with $129 million after raising $90 million in March, including a star-studded fundraiser. They got $26 million. That was on March 29th. Now, among the people there, they mentioned Kelly Loeffler, former senator of Georgia, really rich, and Warren Stevens. Why is that important? Well, he's a billionaire who is a big donor of Nikki Haley, and he co-headlined the event. So that's important. It's a money bomb. There's no doubt about it. So to end, never an ending quest to be negative. People have said, well, a lot of those billionaires have already maxed out. They cannot give anymore. That's not the case with the Dems. They're going to maybe let's spread out their donation. So, of course, you can't just come out and say, what a lot of money raised. Let's see if the Democrats can answer. That's the story. I think when it's all said and done, the Democrats will have more money raised. I think that goes without saying. But the question is, will the Republicans be in shouting distance, and will they be doing enough to get the word out? Everyone knows what Donald Trump can do, but what about these other senators and people down ballot? How would that help? Also, Donald Trump's messaging. Counter-messaging. He's not looking to cancel Social Security. He's not looking to ban abortion in America. He's not looking to get rid of Obamacare. So how do you battle back? You got to have a message. It's got to be on social media. It's going to cost money. Trump does not love writing checks for his campaign. He's done it before, but he doesn't love it. Alex Burns was on This Week with George Stephanopoulos that had Martha Raddatz on it, and he talked about Trump's messaging all along, and I thought it was good to get that take from a guy from Politico, Cut 3.
I do think there is a consistency to Donald Trump, not in terms of his ideology, but in terms of when he gets uncomfortable with the sort of consensus views of the Republican Party. We saw it after Parkland, that he had that moment of wavering on whether maybe we should do gun control because he sees the same headlines as everybody else and reacts on a visceral level. We see it now on abortion. He That's clearly right. isn't comfortable being where the right flank of the party wants him to be on this issue. I don't think he's going to oversee some pullback from the American-Israeli relationship, but I do think there's a familiar set of instincts at play there when he sees these kinds of images and these kinds of stories right. and just sort of balks at the idea of putting his name on it.
See, this is what I'm talking about, Allison. This is what we did on One Nation Saturday. You just want an analyst. You don't have to agree with Trump at all, but just be an analyst. This guy's an analyst because Trump does not like war. He hates blood much more than most presidents, a lot of people behind closed doors. Number two, an abortion, he was never for 0 weeks. Yeah, he wanted Roe v. Wade to be looked at. He was never for that. And he thinks Israel, I'm for Israel, but he's saying, I don't love the way you're conducting this. You know, you don't look good the way you're doing this. What's your plan? Get it done. So at least notice that there's a consistency and a pattern.
No, I agree. It would be nice to hear like the various sides of things, the different points of view without just like you're so one-sided, like be open to possibilities.
Right. Well, he was on to ban all abortion. Not really. Social Security. No. If he was smart, he says, I don't want to touch Social Security. I would love for Trump to say, I have to touch it because it's going to go bankrupt in 2 years. We're going to look at it. I'm not going to get rid of it. But, I think Nikki Haley was saying that. And the people, they remember about Paul Ryan. Paul Ryan, he's like, listen, we got to look at some Medicare, we got to look at these entitlements. I'm not sure we can afford them. And then they had him go throwing a senior citizen off a cliff.
That being said, though, I saw in Axios did a write-up saying this time for baby boomers, they're voting more, they're polling more for Biden
yes.
than Trump, which is very unusual. Usually once you get older, you definitely go more to the right. So then that being said, what would be the harm in Trump embracing that more?
Be interesting. I love to see that when it's all said and done, them going with Biden. I would say this, the same story had Gen Z enrollment, Gen Z being more conservative than previous generations. So he's got a real shot at those under 30s, under 25s, I should say. So he's got a shot at that where he might be losing seniors. But I think, you know what? You got a message that can resonate with seniors. You could nuance that. I think the harder thing for him is to get on the side of some of these radicals that are storming these college campuses with the pro-Hamas, proud Palestinians. Trump's never going to win them over because he's more, you know, he's more to the right on this. He's more in Israel's side than anything else. I have a lot more to discuss, including Israel being the new Donald Trump at the Sunday shows. You know, Trump can't do anything right with these Sunday shows for the most part. Well, the same thing now with Israel. It was just insane. Whoever booked these shows, nobody had a pro-Israeli side. I'm going to talk about that and take your calls, 1-866-408-7669. And if you want to watch the show on as a podcast, you could do that, BrianKilmeadShow.com. You go to wherever you get your podcast and the Fox News app. I was showing this morning on the live feed. Just go to the Fox News app. You touch the bottom, it says watch, and just page over until you get to Fox Radio, or you can just click on the headsets if you're going for a run. You listen to the Brian Kilmeade Show Monday. Don't move.
Both sides, all opinions. It's Brian Kilmeade. Fox News Radio on demand on the Fox News app. Download the app and just click listen. When you swipe left, you can listen to your favorite Fox News talk shows live. Swipe right for the latest Fox News Radio newscasts on demand. Fox News Radio on the Fox News app. Download it today. If you're interested in it, Brian's talking about it. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
Now we have the problem with the pro-Palestine who are actually given Hamas cover. They are participants in the crime. In fact, since October 7, I personally don't differentiate between Hamas and what's so-called Palestinians. Because actually there is no Palestinians. If they did not have Israel as the common enemy, they would kill each other. This is the reality of what's so-called Palestine. This is a human problem.
So you just...
The cause must die. I think enough is enough. And now it's proven, and you are helping Hamas to prove it to the world. This is not acceptable, and we are not going to agree to it. And I tell you something, for the next 10 or 20 years, the Palestinian people will pay the bill that Hamas is caused today. And most likely in blood.
So you realize this guy's Musab Hassan Youssef. He's been on here before. I actually took him out to my son's school to speak to him. His dad is one of the founders of Hamas, in jail right now. He was part of Hamas, got arrested, was put in jail, and at one point he had a revelation. He's telling everyone what we should remember. Hamas is evil. They are the problems. They're actually killing Palestinian Authority. They've arrested a couple of them. They're also going after Islamic Jihad. But most of all, they're trying to wipe out Israel, hiding behind civilians. And when those civilians die, people condemn Israel. It's always a mistake if a civilian dies. It's always the intention if Hamas kills an Israeli. Just keep that in mind. Knowing those two objectives, how could we possibly side with the Palestinians and Hamas? That's what we're doing right now. It is insane to me. So when you have a guy who was a Hamas member tried to sober you up and you're interrupting him saying that's Western rhetoric. I mean, these people are just crazy. I wish people would understand, you know, when it affects you directly, then you wouldn't be so cavalier. And I have great respect for that central food program, but I'll talk about that next.
Radio that makes you think. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
Well, the Repo Act that you're referencing, where we use Russian sovereign assets that are held in Western European or U.S. financial institutions, I believe that Speaker Johnson will bring up support for the supplemental appropriations for Ukraine, for Taiwan, for Israel, immediately after completing the work on FISA and FISA's extension. That deadline of April 19th makes it a priority for the first few days that we're back. But Ukraine remains a priority, as does our support for Israel and Taiwan. And yes, I believe he's fully committed to bringing it up to the floor immediately thereafter. And I think that's critical, as it should have been passed months ago.
Does that even matter to China? I think absolutely. They're watching. Are we losing interest in backing Ukraine after all that interest? Are they saying to themselves, hey, you know what? We'll have a tough year. They'll offer sanctions. They'll condemn us. But in the end, they'll lose interest. We'll take Taiwan. The story will be dead. Michael Pillsbury, author of The 100-Year Marathon, senior fellow of the Heritage Foundation, one of the premier experts on China. Michael, welcome back. Your thoughts about the need to finance Ukraine and how it relates to Taiwan and China.
Well, as you say, Brian, the Chinese are watching very carefully what's happening to us in Ukraine. A great deal of rhetoric from the Biden administration when the invasion first started implied that Ukraine was our best friend. We would sort of do anything we could to make sure that the Russians fail. As that has softened, as the Biden administration now has been revealed to have held back on some of the best weapon systems for 2 years now, Brian, that the Ukrainians wanted, it looks like it wasn't really a full commitment to Ukraine. So the Chinese, obviously, they can take a look at the Taiwan situation. They can see that although Biden on television four times says, oh, I'll defend Taiwan, in reality, the arms that Taiwan has purchased, the things we should be doing to deter an attack on Taiwan, we're really not doing. So to me, it's kind of a dangerous situation that Ukraine and Taiwan are carefully linked.
No question about it. And if you talk to the Japanese president is coming over today, he's going to meet with President Biden. And he's going to say, look, we're going to spend 2% of our budget on defense for the first time. And we want offensive weapons. We want to buy Tomahawks from you. They see the danger of North Korea, who they're trying to talk with. They see the danger of China in the area. So they're looking, that's a good sign that they're looking to fight for themselves. But should we also be doing something to rapidly produce some of the weapon systems that successful countries like Japan will pay for?
Yes, they've got some of the same arms requests that Taiwan does. They want to buy into our jet fighter system. They want better missile defense. They want better command and control. Japan and the U.S. have never had a combined joint command center, Brian. And that's what they want to move toward now. Many people are shocked. They think we've had a treaty with Japan for 50 years. You mean there's no joint command center? That's correct. We also don't have exercises with the Japanese Navy and Air Force in the Taiwan area. It's been kind of a forbidden zone for us to go into for 50 years. So there's a lot more that could be done with Japan. I think the problem is, Brian, that, as you know, I've argued, there's a 100-year marathon approach for China. Take it slowly. Absorb everything as slowly as you can. Get your growth rate up. And on this, the Chinese are succeeding in a way the Biden administration is a dream come true in helping the Chinese 100-year marathon. And I think it's become more and more obvious, including even to the New York Times, that China will take actions to make sure that Biden gets a second term. They don't want Mr. Trump to come back.
They don't. And Janet Yellen's over there. And you notice they've softened their tone since they came to San Francisco. And now Secretary of Treasury Janet Yellen sent a message of mutual cooperation Sunday with his Chinese counterpart, highlighting the improvement in relations since her visit to China last year and focusing on trade and economic sanctions for the first 2 days of her visit. Obviously, but at the same time, China is beginning to flood the world with cheap goods and with a multi-trillion dollar sequel to China's shock that hit global manufacturing 20 years ago. But this time, the U.S. and European Union are threatening to raise trade barriers if they try this again. Could you go behind the scenes here?
Yes, I think what's happening, there's two separate issues. One is, will Biden or Janet Yellen recommend any tough sanctions on China to get them to comply with this free advice she's giving? There's been several news stories about how she gave a long lecture to the Chinese vice premier in charge of the economy. Oh, you should do this. You know, you should have more consumer spending and you should not flood our markets with cheap goods. The problem is, everybody knows over the last 50 years, talking to the Chinese and asking them politely doesn't work. Only if you threaten sanctions, higher tariffs. Mr. Trump has talked about 100% tariffs on some kind of products. That's all that you need to make a successful agreement with the Chinese. But the Biden administration, Mr. Biden himself, they cannot get negotiations going, Brian. There's no documents. There's this bizarre lecturing by our Secretary of the Treasury, who's a famous economist. You know, she's a famous liberal economist. But I don't think the Chinese are going to pay any attention to her. It's a tragedy, or even worse, it's a farce.
But why wouldn't they pay attention?
Because it hurts their economy. Their 100-year marathon growth idea is to surpass us. We're basically $21 trillion, $22 trillion in GDP. They're exceeding $17 trillion. They want to close that gap over the next 10 years so they can tell the world we are the number one economy. Lots of the world, by the way, already believes that. So without pressure on the Chinese, this is what Mr. Trump's unique insight was. He saw them as businessmen. Without pressure, they simply won't agree to anything. And that's what's happening. They gave her a very nice four-day tour. They committed to nothing, including on the fentanyl side of it. And it's like business as usual. Let the Chinese get away with, I hate to say murder, it's not exactly murder, but they're getting away with decimating our economy. Janet Yellen herself used that term.
So they are struggling. Give us the reality of why they are even surprising themselves with how long the sustained economic challenges have lasted.
Well, you have to separate long-term from short-term. Short-term, they're really in trouble. Everybody sort of knows about the 20% unemployment among their young people, just across-the-board set of weaknesses and potential catastrophes for the Chinese. But on the other hand, in the long-term, if you look at their growth rate, they're still scheduled over the next few years, according to World Bank and IMF. They're scheduled to grow at 5% while we grow at 2.5%. That's the writing on the wall that we're going to lose our primacy in the world. And I'm surprised that the American ambassador to Beijing, Nick Burns, career officer, he went on 60 Minutes about 3 weeks ago. He specifically mentioned things that are in my book, The 100-Year Marathon, that we cannot yield global primacy to China. And they are seeking to challenge us on sort of every front. So that in the long term, the danger of China is really quite scary. In the short term, yes, they have problems, they're distracted, but would they use this opportunity to attack Taiwan? That's what everybody's big worry is. Well, these weapon systems have not been delivered yet to Taiwan. This is a perfect time for China to think about it.
I mean, it's been 2 years, maybe even more. Deliver the weapons. And if you have not adjusted the military complex in order to be able to produce these weapons at a big rate, all the we see the problem with Eastern Europe and NATO. They're using old Russian Soviet-era weapons that can't be replaced or replenished. So they should all be buying our weapon system for profit into, you know, for minimal profit in some cases, Estonia, Lithuania. But other places that are Norway, Sweden, Germany, if France want to get to 2%, now you have Taiwan, Japan, they could pay. Why would we not be looking to do this?
Well, there's a trade-off. It's a quite dangerous trade-off between Ukraine and Taiwan in terms of our arms sales. Both Ukraine and Taiwan want F-16s. F-16 is not just a combat air-to-air fighter. It's also a fighter-bomber. It's extremely good techniques for precision bombing. So both Taiwan wants them. They've bought 55 F-16s, Brian, for about $10 billion. They've not been delivered. It's the same thing with the Ukrainians. They started the pilot training program, but the Biden people delayed almost 2 years in providing F-16s, which was the number one choice of the Ukrainians. There's other weapons like this, too, but now you've got a trade-off. But who do I help, Ukraine, which is actually in a war, or Taiwan that I want to deter a Chinese attack? This is what the Chinese are trying to play now on these Internet. Have you seen the New York Times coverage? Even the New York Times now says China's trying to influence our election, using false Donald Trump web addresses to confuse people. So Ukraine versus Taiwan trade-off, the F-16s, that's what to keep your eye on.
But we're talking to Michael Pillsbury. Michael, we've had enough time to realize we got to be able to mass produce these. We're a country with a free market economy. If you could get a profit, why are these companies not expanding their manufacturing base in order to suffice both customers?
They want guarantees, Brian. Raytheon makes a lot of the missiles involved for both the surface-to-air missiles and missile defense in general. And Raytheon is a huge company, very impressive in many, many ways. But they don't want to just take a chance by increasing their production lines, hiring more workers, getting more factories, unless they get a guarantee out of the Biden administration, yes, we're going to buy these missiles. And that's where the hang-up is. There's no guarantee, no contract in place.
I agree that that's a real issue. I can't agree that they could not solve it, because all you do is say, I want you to meet the Norwegian prime minister. I want you to meet the Taiwanese president. They have written, that's their checkbook. That's their signature. They are ready to write it. We'll be the go-between. We'll back it up. I mean, to me, it's easy. I'm going to bring it to something else. Is part of China's plan to come through our southern border and also to penetrate our thought process and our news feed with TikTok?
You know, TikTok is becoming a very strange issue. It didn't used to be important, the Chinese said, at all. Now it looks like this phone call between Biden and Xi Jinping last week looks like the main focus was, in fact, TikTok, that Xi Jinping is warning Biden, even threatening him, don't try to steal our intellectual property. A lot of people don't understand that the TikTok secret sauce, why Steve Mnuchin wants to try to get in and buy it for $100 billion, the secret sauce is this algorithm that shows how you recommend things to your 170 million. So they don't want America to get that. And we've been saying to the Chinese, don't steal our intellectual property. So now it's kind of a cosmic irony that Xi Jinping is warning Biden, don't steal our intellectual property by letting TikTok be sold to an American company or an American conglomerate. This is turning into a major issue, Brian.
It is. But do you think they're using it to manipulate American society?
I think it's pretty obvious that they
– thank you.
And inside China, they don't have the same kind of TikTok. So they protect their own people from the really harmful things that TikTok puts up.
Gotcha. What about the southern border? Do you have any idea what they're up to with the thousands, 24,000 here, 22,000 have come through already in 2024?
What I've been advocating, Brian, is the FBI has to interview some of these people. They've got to ask them, how did you get here? How are you released from China? What kind of travel documents did you have? Have you had military training? Are you meeting with each other? Do you have a name list and contact information that you can all assemble together? To my knowledge, the FBI has not done that. And I'm offering free copies of the 100-Year Marathon book to the FBI to warn them that we can't just have this blind spot when 40,000 Chinese come in and nobody interviews them from the FBI.
It's unbelievable that the FBI wouldn't insist on that. You know, they wouldn't insist on that, making that public in these hearings. We'd like to interview them, but we're told not to, or there's too many for us to get down there, which is crazy because there's plenty of people to interrogate. Michael, thanks so much. Interesting time. Now, have you talked to President Trump? Would you play a role? Should Trump win this election?
I admire President Trump very much. He's the first president to really see the Chinese strategy clearly and then taking concrete action. If you were president, Brian, I'd be your Secretary of Defense, and we'd get these arms sales going.
Right, and you'd be the first person I would call.
Thank you.
I'd get Lighthizer doing the trade deals.
He's wonderful.
Yeah. So in other words, you haven't talked to him yet, or you have?
No, he's not in the job offering phase now. He wants to lock in victory.
Yep. I understand.
So I don't think this is not the time for him to be picking his advisors.
Michael Pillsbury, thanks so much. Always great to have you.
Thanks, Brian.
1-866-408-7669. I'm going to take some calls when we get back. Also, I want to expand on this all-out assault in the West, in America, to turn on Israel. Not on this show.
Expanding your knowledge base. It's the Brian Kilmeade Show. Breaking news, unique opinions. Hear it all on the Brian Kilmeade Show.
The families of the hostages gathered together over the weekend to commemorate this six-month hell they've been going through. Not a single member of Netanyahu's government attended that. And the reason why is because all along the families have been shunned, ignored, sidelined, disrespected. Netanyahu hasn't wanted a hostage deal. There's been many occasions where he could have had a deal, but he hasn't wanted one because that would bring about an earlier end to this war. And as we all know very well, his only method of surviving in the job he's got is to prolong this war. So there is no constituency in Israel that is more critical and cynical about Israel's prime minister than the families of the hostages, because they know that they haven't been a priority for Netanyahu.
Couple of things. That's Ed Lucy, the Financial Times U.S. national editor. That's his opinion. And man, is it cynical and evil. If you really think the prime minister would allow 130 Israeli hostages to extend their stay so he could become prime minister, you really have an evil description of Benjamin Netanyahu. You may think he's too conservative or too liberal or too aggressive and he's not for the two-state solution. But to think he'd allow 130 people to be tortured and maybe even more after taken against his will, you want to be critical that he did not have proper security up or maybe lulled into not having proper security up and the intelligence let him down. You want to do that? Go ahead. But to think that he was walking away from a deal so he could stay prime minister, oh my goodness, can you possibly think something worse about a leader? What he's doing is they give Hamas is the most insane demands in order for them to get a ceasefire that allows them to live another day. And they want the ratio of a hostage to a prisoner is insanity. They'll be out killing again. Now, keep in mind, too, when you have a ceasefire, you let Hamas live. They reconfigure. They come back. So he's got to make sure it's a good deal. Every time someone speaks out in the U.S. against that shows a fracture and a fissure between the U.S. and Israel, they have their hands strengthened. But to think that he would lengthen it for that reason is flat out insane. Robert O'Brien has a great perspective on this. He was a national security advisor to Trump. He'll play a key role should Trump win again. Get a perspective on who the bad guys are. Cut 17.
The deaths of these aid workers is tragic, but it's on Hamas. I mean, Hamas is the maniacal terrorist organization that went into Israel on October 7th, killed women and children, burned people to death, slaughtered kids in front of their parents in front of their children. I mean, this was a terrible thing. It's Hamas that put those Palestinians in Gaza at risk. And it's Hamas that is using them as human shields and using aid workers as human shields.
That's a perspective I thought we all agreed on. When things get tough, the president runs for the hills. Where is his messaging to tell people why Israel is the right on this? To explain why they have to go into Rafah. Instead, he says too many civilians will die. What you do is you work behind the scenes at a corridor. And then you manipulate the way you can. If somebody wants to get the story with Fox or Washington Times or the Washington Post, okay, and it leaks out that Trump behind the scenes is working really hard to twist the arm of Netanyahu for a corridor, that's one thing. But to go out publicly and turn and use your spokespeople to do it, like Schumer, despicable.
News radio studios in Midtown Manhattan. It's the fastest growing radio talk show. Brian Kilmeade.
Hi, everyone. Thanks so much for being here. We come to you from Midtown Manhattan. Heard around the country, heard around the world. A lot going on today, including the eclipse. I'm pretty sure you can't stop the eclipse. It can't be postponed, but it can be obstructed. We'll talk about that whole line of totality, where in New York, our governor gave an interesting press conference where she recommended guaranteed traffic, recommended snacks, water, and gas. Thanks for that, Governor. Now, if you could only handle crime, that would certainly help. A little bit of taxes and stop vilifying rich people. That would be, I guess, a step in the right direction. This hour, we're going to be joined by Michael Goodwin. And Charles Payne will bring us inside the economy. So let's get to the big three.
Now, with the stories you need to know, it's Brian's Big Three.
Number three.
Ukraine remains a priority, as does our support for Israel and Taiwan. And yes, I believe he's fully committed to bringing it up to the floor immediately thereafter. And I think that's critical, as it should have been passed months ago.
That is, that, of course, is Congressman French Hill. And he is weighing in on D-Day week for Speaker Johnson as he efforts to do the right thing and get Ukraine and Taiwan aid and get Zelensky some help before Russia takes the whole country. How does that deal look? What does it look like? And what can he extract from President Biden in order to get it done, Pelosi style?
Number two.
The president, again, was clear. I won't get ahead of him, Margaret. I won't prejudge decisions he will
why
or won't make.
Heard from
but
him
we,
on this. If he feels so strongly, why isn't the president out there talking about
it? You saw his statement after
I
the
read
Prime
a paper
minister.
Statement.
Yeah, she is so ridiculous, sanctimonious. When she has a point of view, don't pretend like you're a newswoman. You're sitting there as an opinion host pretending to be a newswoman. Just say who you are. That is John Kirby. Israel sees enemies all around. Now widespread American sport begins to wobble. Loss of perspective by American media. Not by this show, We will talk about it.
Number one.
My view is now that we have abortion where everybody wanted it from a legal standpoint, the states will determine by vote or legislation or perhaps both. And whatever they decide must be the law of the land. In this case, the law of the state.
Yep, 2024. Two big announcements today for both Biden and Trump. You just heard Trump setting up talk about abortion. And you hear Biden's going to talk about forgiving student loans for students, which is ridiculous. Meanwhile, President Trump with a big weekend. He raised $50 million at a dinner in Mar-a-Lago on Saturday night. Joining us now to discuss it, Michael Goodwin. Michael, it says Donald Trump says he raised $50 million, but we know for sure in a matter of minutes, that minutes after it was over at Radio City, that Joe Biden raised $26 million. We don't question that.
Right. Of course. Brian, the double standards, as I often say, if the media didn't have double standards, they wouldn't have any standards at all.
Absolutely. So a couple other things that are going on. What do you think about the president's stance on abortion? This is what he announced this morning on Truth Social. Cut six.
My view is now that we have abortion where everybody wanted it from a legal standpoint, the states will determine by vote or legislation or perhaps both. And whatever they decide must be the law of the land. In this case, the law of the state. Many states will be different. Many will have a different number of weeks, or some will have more conservative than others, and that's what they will be. At the end of the day, this is all about the will of the people. You must follow your heart or, in many cases, your religion or your faith.
Your thoughts about that? It's not really the earth. I thought it was going to be more him saying, I'm looking for a week, a certain week. Do you think he made the right move here?
Well, look, I think this is probably not the last thing he'll have to say on this. But you're right, Brian. I mean, he has been speculating and searching, I think, for the right answer here. And the right answer being one that obviously it does not cause him in this election a lot of blowback. I mean, I think the end of Roe v. Wade surprised a lot of Republicans. I think they believe that the pro-life movement was stronger and bigger than it has turned out to be, even in some red states like Ohio, where people have voted clearly that they want to preserve some abortion rights. And so I think President Trump has been looking for what is that formula, what's the magic word, what's the time period that will basically be acceptable in both conservatives and moderately liberal states. I mean, he's been very clear. He's not going to go for 9 months, right, that you can have an abortion up to the moment of birth. And in Virginia, apparently, under the former governor, even after birth, you can abort the child. So I think the president is looking at some of the when I talked to him about this, the question of Europe came up and what was going on in the different European countries. Most of them are in the 12 to 15 to 16 week range where you can have an abortion. And we know also, Brian, that he was very critical of Ron DeSantis for signing the 6 week bill in Florida. He thought that was the end of his campaign. And Trump, in my conversation with him, and I'm sure in many others, will always include the fact that we have to win elections. And so he's being practical, I think, more than ideological about that. And look, it was his justices, the justices he nominated to the Supreme Court, that overturned Roe. And I think the one thing missing from what he's talking about is this is the way it's supposed to be. The states are supposed to make these decisions. Not everything has to be a federal government decision. And so I think he could improve his argument by saying this is our constitutional system at work. This is the way it's supposed to be. The will of the people, as in the Constitution, is expressed in the states, not in Washington.
So let's switch, if we can, over to Israel. It's been 185 days of war, and Israel's getting pressure from all sides, literally, from Hezbollah, from Hamas. Now, of course, the Houthi rebels, long distance, and Iran is fundamentally behind all of it. And Iran's looking to retaliate for them losing those Al-Quds Force members, which I thought was a great move. And now the unexpected, they've beginning to lose American support and this administration. I think they've totally lost perspective after 185 days who the bad guys are and how it was just I've never seen such negativity towards Israel on these Sunday shows. Here's Christopher Locklear. This guy is totally clueless. He is, says the IDF is actually targeting aid workers. Cut 10.
We do not accept it because what has happened to World Central Kitchen and MSF's convoys and shelters is part of the same pattern of deliberate attacks on humanitarians, health workers, journalists, UN personnel, schools and homes. This is not just about implementing an effective deconfliction mechanism. Our movements and locations are shared, coordinated and identified already. This is about impunity, a total disregard for the laws of war, and now it must become about accountability.
Right. Your thoughts about that?
Well, look, Brian, I think that the Jew hatred is never far from the surface. The United States has committed atrocities in its war. Great Britain has. Every country in Europe has.
Look what happened in Afghanistan. The guy was loading up a water jug in his car. We killed his whole family.
That's right. And nobody got fired for that. Israel, I think, has taken great caution, greater than normal caution. And the numbers bear it out if you will honestly look at the numbers. You see all the time 30,000, 32,000 innocent souls killed by Israel. Wait a minute. Not a single terrorist has been killed? They're all babies and women? I mean, come on. None of this is real. This ultimately is about anti-Semitism. It is also about the pushing the anything for peace mentality, as long as Israel has to take the blow. When it happens in Europe, you don't find the same kind of patience. You don't find the same sort of pity for civilians. But when it happens in Israel, you know, take those 1,200 people who were slaughtered. Just take it for the team, you know. Stop hitting back. Stop attacking your enemies. That's not modern. It's silly. It's ridiculous. And the great tragedy here is Joe Biden is betraying Israel for the Muslim American
and
vote
so is his
in
whole
Michigan
party.
And Minnesota.
But so is his whole party. It's not just him.
Of course.
Yes, it's insane. I mean, before I play Chris Van Hollen, who's an embarrassment, in Michigan there was a rally on Sunday. They called it Al-Quds Day. Why would you ever celebrate a fighting force in an intelligence apparatus inside Iran? They were chanting death to America, death to Israel, quoting Malcolm X in his early days when he said, one of the rottenest countries that has ever existed on this earth, arguing that America's entire system is corrupt. They were chanting Genocide Joe, of course. They're used to that. They're interrupting different speeches across the country in an organized way. So now you want to give way to the chant to America, sect of Michigan. Here's Senator Chris Van Hollen, the Democrat. Cut 13.
Defensive weapons are things like air defense, Iron Dome. We're not taking the position that we should not be sending Israel systems that it needs to defend itself. But offensive weapons, I mean, airplanes, bombs, artillery, everything that's being used right now in Gaza, these are offensive weapons that are being used. And so what it says is that you shouldn't be shipping more weapons to the Netanyahu government when they're not meeting their commitments, including the delivery of humanitarian aid, or what they're not complying with international law.
Really? Nancy Pelosi's leading the charge. Cut off all weapons.
It's extraordinary. October 7th was Israel's 9/11. And did we only defend ourselves after 9/11? Didn't we go and avenge and kill the killers? Isn't that what we did in Iraq and Afghanistan? I don't know. I thought we killed Osama bin Laden. I didn't know we were only allowed to defend ourselves and build an Iron Dome over our own country. I mean, this is nonsense. But you're right, Brian. It is the Democratic Party. And it is extraordinary. Every time a right-wing anti-Semite crawls out of a corner, Donald Trump is called upon to denounce him. Fair enough. But where is Joe Biden when, as you say, they're chanting death to America in American cities? Where is Joe Biden? Why doesn't he repudiate this support and say, I don't want the support of anti-Semites? If you support me, don't. I don't want your vote. You're beneath contempt. Israel right. is our ally, and I will continue to defend and support Israel. If you want to blow up Israel, do me a favor. Get out of this country. Go back to your own country. Why doesn't Joe Biden say that? And why does the media not demand he say that? Because they're in the tank together. Anything to defeat Donald Trump. If it means Israel is under attack, Israel is constantly under assault, that's fine. It's a small trade-off. We've got to do anything to stop Donald Trump. And I think when you, Brian, for a lot of people who don't follow Israeli politics, one good way to look at the American view of Israel is that the Democratic Party, Barack Obama, Bill Clinton, they've always hated Benjamin Netanyahu. He is to them not just a Republican, he's now a MAGA Republican. Even though he and Donald Trump are on the outs, they want a like-minded government in Israel. They want a left-wing government in Israel. That's why they invited Benny Gantz. Imagine that. They don't invite the prime minister. They invite one of his rivals who's in the government. They invite him to Washington. They invite him to London. This is an attempt to overthrow the government of Israel. And if Israeli citizens have to die in the process, hey, that's just the price of progress for the progressives.
Well, by the way, Benny Gantz agrees with Netanyahu on the way he's conducting the war. So that's a problem for this administration. We no longer have the bad guy of Netanyahu. And some people are saying that he's keeping the war going to extend his power. That's one of the most evil things you could say. People die, his own people die, so we could have a few more months in power. Believe me, that's not what he's looking to do. The quicker the win, the more chance he has of keeping that job. He has to go into Rafah. There's just no question about it. I have my final exit question for you is totally different than we're just discussing. But we see the offensive coming after the investigation on Mayor Adams. Now they're talking about him getting upgraded on a trip to Turkey. Did Turkey get improvements or get approvals because of a special relationship with Mayor Adams? We know the FBI took his phone when he just got out of a car one day. So do you think the ground is being set for Cuomo to come back and Adams to be ousted?
Well, look, I don't think that two things are related from the perspective of the FBI. I think Andrew Cuomo would like to run, but has said he would not challenge Adams in a Democratic primary. We'll see. But there's no question that Adams has been weakened by these investigations. I have to say, though, Brian, in the mayor's defense, if this is all they have, being upgraded on flights to Turkey by the Turkish airline. I mean, then I think we should get the whole political class fitted for handcuffs. I mean, I'm not defending it. I just don't think it's the stuff of corruption. He wasn't even mayor when these things happened. And he didn't have the power to do anything, really, as Brooklyn Borough president, that these things they're looking at. Now, if there is campaign finance violations, and there have been that talk, if there's outright bribery, but one of the standards that the Supreme Court has set and that I think was in force when they investigated a previous mayor, Bill de Blasio, was you have to put some money in your pocket, or you have to take real actions for corruption. There has to be a quid pro quo with your government power and your personal profit.
Yeah, I do think they're targeting him. I'm not really sure what's going on there, but it is pretty relentless. Michael Goodwin, thanks so much. Always great.
My pleasure. Thank you, Brian.
1-866-408-7669. Bottom of the hour, the great Charles Payne joins us. And what does the economy mean to you? Don't move.
Coming to you on a need-to-know basis, because, man, do you need to know. It's Brian Kilmeade. the fastest 3 hours in radio. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
I want to personally thank Caitlin Clark for lifting up our sport. You are one of the GOATs of our games, and we appreciate you.
And that was great. Dawn Staley was a great player in her own right. She coached South Carolina to an undefeated season, which is awesome. Five new starters. They win another national championship. And Caitlin Clark and Iowa eliminated them last year. They got their revenge this year. Evidently, they led it at the half, did Iowa. Caitlin Clark was kind of held back a little bit in the second half, but she had a great season. Staley was very deferential. But the big news is that Staley said the day before, when asked, should trans women be allowed to play women's sports in college? She said yes, which is insane. As quickly Pierce Morgan pointed out, okay, should LeBron James, who gets up feeling like a woman, be able to play in the WNBA? Should a guy like Leah Thomas, who's swimming on the men's team and average, should they be allowed to say, I'm a woman, and go compete with the women and Riley Gaines and then win every single event? The answer, of course, is no. Easy for Billie Jean King to say that, Dawn Staley to say that. But if a UConn men's player on the bench decide to be a woman and play for UConn, they have your national championship, Dawn Staley. You're okay with that? I didn't think so. Charles Payne next. By the way, see you in Henderson, Nevada, April 27th for the History, Liberty, and Laughs Tour. BrianKilmeade.com for tickets. Go get them.
The talk show that's getting you talking. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
Well, I say we have the best economy in the world. We've got to make it better. We really do have the best economy in the world. Jobs are up more than they've ever been. We're in a situation where the lowest unemployment rate in 50 years was maintained. We have people who just, but people, look, I think we're going to find out that what happened is a consequence of the crisis we had in health is have a lasting effect.
So that is Joe Biden again saying that he's got the best economy in the world. And, you know, he looks at the numbers, unemployment numbers, the GDP numbers, and he says, okay, we're back on track. That is not what a lot of people feel. And after spending a summer spending $40 million just selling Bidenomics, it didn't work. So they switched gears, but he keeps going back to it. Charles Payne with us now. He is the host of Making Money with Charles Payne. Weekdays at 2 to 3 p.m. Eastern Time, and author of Unbreakable Investor, and that's out now. And by the way, all our listeners can get a free copy by going to 50505. So, Charles, welcome.
Hey, how's it going?
So I watched David Axelrod on his podcast, and he says it drives him, and you know he is the architect of Obama's two election wins and Deval Patrick's win in Massachusetts.
Right.
And he said it drives him crazy, if I could use my words, every time Joe Biden keeps talking about the economy, because it makes him look out of touch with the people. Who do you agree with? Biden, the economy's great, or Axelrod, you're not seeing it?
I agree with Biden that we have the economy that's the envy of the world, the developed world. And I agree with Axelrod that he's insulting the hell out of Americans by telling them that they feel better than they feel.
How could both be true?
Because and this is what the election is all about, Brian. This is why people must pay attention right now. It's ironic that President Biden would brag about America's economy and capitalism and at the same time run on a campaign to destroy it. That's what people need to pay attention to because, yeah, we do have the envy. We don't want to be Europe. We don't want to be Germany. You know, I'm scheduled to do about 15 speeches this year. My central theme before the election will be Germany. All of Europe is a basket case. They're the worst. We're going down the same path in part because of the climate change thing. This whatever that is that gets a country to commit economic suicide, we are on that path. Yes, we are living on the fumes of things that came before Biden, that came
like
before Trump.
Like getting rid of the gas car.
Getting rid of the internal combustion engine. Let the consumer decide. By the way, what we're going to do to our electric grid, what we're going to do to it, we're going to have an electricity crisis in about a year or so. Everyone's going to be dealing with brownouts and blackouts, particularly if you make everyone drive an EV. It's nuts. It's economic suicide. Here's the irony. Germany doing the same thing. Guess what country imports the most coal in Europe? Germany. They got rid of the nukes. They don't have any oil. They don't have any gas. It's so ironic. It's so nuts. So I do think it's disingenuous for President Biden to run on the notion that America has this great economy when he wants to dismantle it. You don't take corporate tax rates from 17% to 28% and get to brag about, you know, the economy. Because it's not going to be the same economy. The same opportunities aren't going to be there.
Where did Trump have the corporate?
17%. We're still living under Trump's corporate taxes.
Right, and he wants to bring it back up.
Right, to 28%.
Right, so that's a problem. So what about these numbers? And Charles, you might not have this, but you know we see 303,000 jobs last week. So we see them adding, and goes, that's 100,000 more. And then it turns out, if you look at the numbers, a lot of them are government jobs and a lot of them are illegal immigrants getting jobs through work visas.
Right. 71,000 government jobs. The government job data is through the roof. It's crazy. Another 70,000 in health care, which is really government funded, you know. And then 70,000, 60,000, 67,000, some odd, leisure hospitality. The real number was private sector is a 230,000. Again, to your point, there's so many problems with this jobs report. So many problems with it. The illegal immigration part of it plays a role. But here's the thing, and I'm glad you brought it up, Brian, because for the last 3 weeks, a lot of the economists I've been talking to have been trying to ease this in here, how great migration is making it. Business Insider had an article last month how immigration saved us from a recession. Now, of course, they conflate legal and illegal. And what they're trying to do, and this is how they see a problem. First, they send out the so-called experts all over there, wherever they can get them, and they start to seed it with expert seeding. And then the politicians come in and they kind of say, hey, listen, why are we so upset with illegal immigration? It kept us out of a recession. I mean, it would be nuts for Biden to say that, but this is the kind of thing I could see a lot of his underlings, because they're already kind of suggesting that. We love immigration. We love legal migration, right? But the notion of trying to connect illegal immigration to us not going into a recession. And by the way, you have to ask, what policies do we have that people can pour over into the border? And let's say, for instance, that key bridge, the Francis Scott Key Bridge. Yeah. So there were five people on the bridge, one from Guatemala, one from, they're all Central American.
Yeah.
From Central America. You know, the unemployment rate in Baltimore? You know how many people there aren't working, but they're being paid not to work, essentially because of the social welfare programs that we have? We need to be introspective of ourselves, what we're doing here. We're not educating people or training them to fix bridges. We're not educating them or training them to work on AI. What the hell are we doing in this country?
Right. Well, are there people on welfare that could have been fixing that bridge instead of Guatemala? I want you to – J.D. Vance was on. I know you respect him as an Ivy Leaguer. With an Ivy League degree who served in the military. Cut seven.
But over the last 3 or 4 years, much of the job growth from the Biden administration has gone to the foreign-born. Many of those, of course, are illegal aliens. If you contrast that with the Trump economy, Maria, which was about productivity enhancements, higher wages for American workers, more manufacturing, and ultimately better, good-paying jobs for American workers. With the Biden economy, where so much of the economic growth has gone to the foreign-born, has gone to illegal immigrants, while American workers struggle to feed their families and struggle to buy homes, struggle to actually live the American dream.
So you get what he's saying, but I would say this. If the average American looking for a job, there are jobs out there. Do you agree with that?
There are jobs out there. And again, we're in this interesting point. That's why I brought up the both ends of the spectrum. On one end of the spectrum, you live in Jersey. I live in Jersey, New York. Anytime you drive by a construction site,
I'm Long Island. But
I'm sorry. Yeah. I'm sorry. I feel for you. But anyway.
Because of the traffic? And I can't live in New Jersey. They don't want me there.
No, they kicked you out. No, the point is, and all the construction sites you go by, and you see a lot of immigrants, right? And they do a good job, right? Again, where are we doing the training for native-born Americans for that? But the other end of the spectrum is how many migrants are brought in legally by these big tech companies to work on STEM, right? And we're not preparing that. What are we exactly doing in this nation? And I agree with JD in the sense that we had organic growth. This economy is being fueled by federal money printing and fiscal money printing.
I thought we stopped that.
The money that's still earmarked to come into the economy. By the way, I just talked about 71,000 government jobs. Those are state and local. Where do you think the state and local got that cash from?
Stimulus money.
Right. So they didn't, you know, the government, federal government cuts them a check in July of 2023. They didn't spend it then. They know when to start using that money. They know when to start hiring. They know the game. They know how it's played. You played into the election. There's hundreds of billions of dollars still coming in. By the way, that's why inflation won't go down.
So do you find this encouraging? Gen Z enrollment in trade jobs up 16%. Vocational programs, 23%. Construction jobs, 7%. HVAC, vehicle repair. So that's a positive.
It's a positive, but it's got to be, at this stage, it should be triple digits, up 150%, up 200%.
And not going to college?
Well, not everyone has to go to college, right? I'm just saying, though, if you're going to go to college, you should be prepared for college, right? And, you know, this whole student loan thing, the people who really have gotten shafted are people who were seduced into going to college, really didn't have the academic skill set to do it, and end up dropping out after 2 years.
And now they're saddled
with debt. They're saddled with debt and no degree. People in this country that have a degree don't deserve a nickel of the taxpayers' money because, for the most part, they're the most blessed people on the planet. They will live longer than the average person in America. They will make $2 to $3 million more. Their kids will see less violence. They will live a life that is ideal by any standard.
Charles, we're going to come back and talk about your book.
All right, great.
The Unbreakable Investor, and also what's going to be on the show today. Are you also obsessed with the eclipse?
I'm not obsessed with it, but it's intriguing. I will talk about this. I'm going to have fun with it on this show.
You're not against it. If you had your way, you're not coming out against the eclipse.
I will tell you this, that since 1954, the stock market has been up for every eclipse except one, total eclipse except one. So that's what I can tell you.
Back in a moment.
Honest commentary, unique opinions, no agenda. It's Brian Kilmeade. He's so busy, he'll make your head spin. It's Brian Kilmeade.
I wouldn't go out there and extol the miracle of the Biden economy. It just drives me crazy when he does that. I think he needs to put himself on the side of working people in their economic fight here.
That is David Axelrod just saying, I'm a little shocked that Joe Biden's not listening to me. Although, Joe Biden, you had some choice words for David Axelrod. Charles Payne is here. His book is Unbreakable Investor. Just your thoughts, Charles, just to people just tuning in right now about what Axelrod just said and the significance of a guy on his side trying to get a message to him.
Well, I think what Axelrod knows and what he sees is that, hey, two things, maybe three. A, the economy is not great for all Americans. All right. And in fact, it's a struggle for the majority of Americans. And B, if you keep telling them that they're doing great, and when they're not doing great, they're going to be offended. But also, it suggests too that you won't make the moves three to ever make it right. In other words, if you think it's fine, why change? I mean, the first part of change is to acknowledge that you've made some mistakes. President Biden has never acknowledged a mistake that I can think of. I mean, everything was Trump's fault. That fault, my hands were tied, I couldn't do anything. But I've never heard him say, listen, I had an idea and it sucked. I just haven't seen it.
Right.
And it's ironic because we always talk about the media always talks about the ego of President Trump. But the ego of President Biden is dangerous at this point because he won't change course.
So Unbreakable Investors now out. Build the American dream in any economic cycle. How do you build the dream in this cycle? Interest rates high, inflation higher than we remember it.
This cycle actually underscores why you have to build the dream. It's not going to be built for you. You know, you're not going to just put money in a 401k and be okay. 401k balances in the third quarter of last year were the same as they were in the third quarter, the average account, and the same as the third quarter 5 years earlier. If you don't want to do any work at all and you want to put money in there, particularly if the company's going to match, that's fine. But you can build the American dream because even in a country that has all the problems that we have, we're still a $26 trillion economy.
Right.
There's so many opportunities. And by the way, look at the stock market. It is absolutely on fire. It has nothing to do with the economy per se. It has everything to do with the future.
What are you looking at? What should people be looking at now?
In terms of the market in general?
The market and
stocks.
Listen,
obviously you want exposure to artificial intelligence, right?
True.
That
Well, there's
a handful of companies. I'm reluctant to say companies that my guys may have. I don't want someone to buy stock 100% higher than my clients have it, but I would say have a list ready, you know, and it would have this usual suspects of NVIDIA, Supermicro. Micron is a name I'm loving pounding the table on.
An American company?
Yeah. Micron is such a great American company. It's out of Iowa. It's one of the Idaho. It's one of the few tech companies, chip companies in America. And guess who funded it? The same guy, J.R. Simplot. You know, this name may not be familiar to you, but he grew up as a dirt poor kid in America. Right. I mean, dirt poor. There was a farmer who had a lot of land, though, not far from his house. He didn't have any kids. He was a stone-cold alcoholic. So J.R. Simplot, as a little kid, goes over there. The guy gives him a gig. He loves him, falls in love with him, and kind of gives him the farm. J.R. Simplot's growing the farm. All of a sudden, he gets this big contract with a company that's supplying with potatoes. The company was McDonald's. So he becomes a billionaire, and someone comes along and says, listen, we've got a semiconductor company. Can you help us? Sure. So J.R. Simplot, he was the one who put all the money up for Micron.
Gotcha. Yeah. So those are some of the things you should be looking at. But when you say unbreakable investor, I was looking at Warren Buffett. And Warren Buffett came out and says, I don't understand people that want to balance their portfolio. Because if you believe in a company, why would you want to balance out something that goes against with your company, whether it's Apple or Facebook or something like that? Do you understand that mindset?
I agree 1,000%. 1,000%. That's one of the reasons these 401k balances don't move. Because they put their money in these mutual funds.
Push, pull.
And you'll have the 10 best semiconductor stocks in the 10 worst. Now, with the way it's marketed is that it mitigates risk. And it does. It can't go down too much if you have the 10 best. But it also mitigates the upside. And that's what we're in the stock market for. Now, I'm not saying go out there and you swing for the fences every time. But I have developed strategies over the years. And I'm telling you, it's you can make so much more money in the stock market by focusing on owning great companies at the right time.
And still, that's fundamentals.
Fundamentals.
Do you look around? Do you worry about our debt as it relate? And do you worry about our dollar as it relates to America?
I worry about the debt tremendously. In fact, one of the senses of urgency is that one day that you know what's going to hit the fan, and people have to be. If you think things are tough now, they're going to be tough. I think we're going to go through a period like the 1800s, and the 1800s were so amazing in this country. But by the same token, we had four Great Depressions, a Civil War, four Great Depressions. We started 1800 as a nobody. By 1890, we eclipsed Great Britain as the number one economy in the world.
While going through everything you described.
Right. And I think we're looking at something very similar.
So do you think – I understand I was talking to somebody who was with the president. All he talks about is the debt. How do we get this debt down? So do you think if we're on a schedule to pay down the debt – that will be enough to give people additional belief in the economy to bring investing in, if there is a program to bring it down? Because now they say the interest is more than the Defense Department.
It's $1 trillion, yeah. It's more than defense, more than education. I mean, you know, what could we do every year with an extra trill, right? Yeah, trillion bucks. You can do a few things with that. The key is spending, though. You can have a plan to pay it down, like most people listening say, okay, I'm going to pay $100 a month on my credit card. But if you spend $200 on your credit card, guess what? You're going deeper and deeper into the hole. And honestly, this is where you kind of come up with pox on both houses to a degree. It's tough. Listen, you may have to get to the idea of no career politicians. Get people in and out of there so that they're not trying to get a bridge to nowhere and be reelected over and over and over again.
So politicians are the problem. So Unbreakable Investors available now. For our listeners, they can go 505-505.
Right. 505-505.
Yeah, 505-505. And they can get a free copy because they're listening. And you
free
just
copy.
Put in my name.
Brian, 505-505. Or they can go to unbreakableinvestor.com. Free copy of the book. They do have to pay postage and handling.
$7.
Right.
So what?
But it's a companion book to the Unstoppable Prosperity that I did a couple of years ago. That did like 400,000 copies. And here's the thing. This book, I begin it by talking about why you want to do this for your family.
Got it. You're looking for your future. Get security. Start being as happy as Charles Payne is wherever he goes. He knows his money's working for him, so he doesn't have to. But he chooses to work anyway. Charles, thanks so
much. Thanks a lot, buddy.
All right, pick it up. Unbreakable Investor. Brian Kilmeade. Keep it here.
From high atop Fox News headquarters in New York City, always seeking solutions, never sowing division, it's Brian Kilmeade.
Hi, everyone. So glad you're here. Hope you had a fantastic weekend. We're back in action today. In a few hours, we're going to find out about the eclipse. I believe it's going to happen. Hopefully, you can see it. You're in the area of totality, which we can look up and be able to see this moment with the right glasses on. People are going crazy for it. I think it's a point of unity. I like that part of it. I do look forward to it being over so we can talk about something else, and we will. We'll talk about crime and lack of punishment with Heather McDonald, and we'll do just that. We'll also be taking your calls at 1-866-408-7669. We will say that the President of the United States is going to be in Wisconsin today, and the former president is going to be in Atlanta at a private fundraiser. But let's us get to the big three.
Now, with the stories you need to know, it's Brian's Big Three.
Number three.
Ukraine remains a priority, as does our support for Israel and Taiwan. And yes, I believe he's fully committed to bringing it up to the floor immediately thereafter. And I think that's critical, as it should have been passed months ago.
Right. That is D-Day week for Speaker Johnson as he efforts to do the right thing and get Ukraine aid to Zelensky before he falls to Russia and still keep his job as Speaker. What should the deal look like? What should he be extracting from President Biden, who can't afford to lose another conflict on his watch?
Number two.
The president, again, was clear. I won't get ahead of him, Margaret. I won't prejudge decisions he will
why
or won't make.
Haven't heard from
but
him
we,
on this? If he feels so strongly, why isn't the president out there talking about
you
this?
You saw his statement after
I
the
read
prime
a paper
minister.
Statement.
Wow, look at her. Listen to her disdain. Margaret Brennan of Face the Nation. Israel sees enemies all around. Now widespread American support begins to wobble. You just heard the media. Loss of perspective by American media and a chant of death to America in Michigan for its support of Israel. We push back on this show.
Number one.
My view is now that we have abortion where everybody wanted it from a legal standpoint, the states will determine by vote or legislation or perhaps both. And whatever they decide must be the law of the land. In this case, the law of the state.
Yes, 2024, two big announcements. One, Joe Biden wants to forgive student loan debt despite what the Supreme Court said he couldn't. And Trump sends shockwaves with a $50 million fundraiser at Mar-a-Lago. $50 million. Also, the president made a big announcement today when it comes to abortion. He says every state should decide on their own. Heather McDonald joins us now. She's the Thomas W. Smith Fellow at the Manhattan Institute, New York Times bestselling author. Her latest book, When Race Trumps Merit, How the Pursuit of Equity Sacrifices Intelligence, Destroys Beauty, and Threatens Lives. Heather, welcome back.
Brian, it's so great to be with you. Thank you.
Hey, first off, I just love when we see these stats. I think about you all the time that say crime is going down. We're going in the right direction. The president's taking a bow for it. But they don't walk the city streets. They don't hop on the subway. There's no one in D.C. who thinks that, and there's no one in New York City who thinks that. There's no non-politician in Chicago, San Francisco, Oakland, or Los Angeles who thinks that.
Well, here's the trick that they use, Brian. Crime may be down over the massive highs in the post-George Floyd race riot world, but it's way up compared to the world before the post-George Floyd race riots. So in New York City, shootings are still up 50%. Last year compared to 2019, before the entire elite establishment in politics, our mayoralty, our governors, decided that policing was endemically racist, and police officers were racist from the day they started on the job, and we saw the massive tolerance for crime, because fighting crime does have a disparate impact on black criminals. We saw the demonization of the cops, and so people are experiencing an ongoing crime increase that is completely unacceptable. It should not be excused. I'm going to be very absolute here, Brian. One shooting, one robbery of an honest store owner is too many. None of that should be tolerated.
It shouldn't, but it is. Over the weekend, a man was stabbed in the subway on the E train on Manhattan subway. Just by standing there, two individuals came up to him on 53rd and Lex. So he gets stabbed, he gets rushed to the hospital. They have enough cameras, they could see the guy. But what I think is unbelievable is Carl Hastie and these politicians, for example, in Albany, that just want to keep this zero cash bail in place. And one of his statements, I thought about you too, when he came out and said, stiff penalties don't deter crime. You want to work with that statement?
Well, you know, the fact of the matter is that all these people are recidivists. They have massive criminal backgrounds. They're either like hardened street criminals, or they are noticeably, visibly, obviously mentally ill and should be off the streets. We should not be tolerating this. Of course, long penalties make a difference, because the one thing that we do know that works to stop crime in the incarceration system is prisoner menopause. Prisoners age out of their crime years. But when you have turnover in the system, or people not being incarcerated at all, which is also what's going on, Brian, and I want to just emphasize to your listeners that everything crazy that you see happening in the criminal justice system today, why people are not getting prosecuted for petty theft, for large theft, for turnstile jumping, for trespass, for assault on officers, it's all because of race. It is all because, I'm surprised that you didn't quote Heastie saying, well, if we reimpose bail, it will have a disparate impact. It will be racially inequitable. That is why we're not enforcing the law, because if we do in a colorblind constitutional fashion, it will have a disparate impact on black criminals. Why? Not because the law is racist, but because the crime rates are so high. In New York City, for example, Brian, here's just the reality that the police face and that they get criticized for. Blacks are 22% of the population in New York City. They commit year in, year out about 75% of all shootings. If you add Hispanic shootings to black shootings, you account for virtually 100% of all shootings in New York City. So that means that the police cannot go to sites of these insane, these barbaric drive-by shootings without being given a description, if anybody's cooperating for once, of a black or Hispanic criminal. The police wish, they hope against hope, that for once somebody will give them the description of a white drive-by shooter. It virtually never happens. Whites are 34% of New York's population. They commit maybe at best 1% of all shootings. And that's true in every single city.
So if you look at it right now, rape is up. There have been 11 rapes reported already in 2024 as opposed to four. Robberies, 68 to 64. Felony assaults up 105 to 89 last year. Burglaries is still trailing. Grand larceny, 251 to 148 last year. So the numbers are going up. And he says that because there's no stiff crimes, there's nothing to do with it. So I don't understand what's going to break into the left-wing stance when it comes to crime.
Nothing will. Nothing will. I mean, even when they get assaulted themselves, some of them do turn around. That several years ago, there was a hilarious hypocrisy on the part of one of Minneapolis's left-wing politicians from their farmer and labor party there, who'd been all for decriminalizing juvenile crime and carjackings, and then she got carjacked in her driveway and was roughed up, and she said, she thundered, you know, this is completely unacceptable. We have to get these juvenile criminals off the streets. So sometimes it serves as at least a temporary awakening. But generally, they're so committed to the ideology that it just doesn't matter. Because, again, they believe that they are helping blacks by saying we're not going to enforce the law. But, of course, as you know, Brian, and, you know, conservatives can say this ad nauseum, when you back off on sound constitutional policing, it's the black lives that get taken the most. Black juveniles in the post-George Floyd race riot world, Brian, are shot at 100 times the rate of white juveniles. Who is shooting them? Not the cops, not whites, but other black juveniles. That is the degree of crime that's going on every day that the left turns its eyes away from because it is terrified of black inner-city cultural pathologies.
Heather McDonald with us now. She is a crime expert, and we got way too much for her to study. So wait a second. You're saying that black-on-black crime is a big deal, and that most crime is committed by African Americans. It's not saying there's a bias. You're just saying the numbers are numbers. Math is math.
Bodies are bodies. The bodies speak for themselves. You know, homicide is our most reliable statistic, blacks between the ages of 10 and 24 die of gun homicide at 25 times the rate in that age cohort. Those are the bodies, and they're being shot by other blacks. We both know, Brian, if whites were shooting blacks at that rate, we would hear about it every single day on CNN. In fact, CNN, the Black Lives Matter activists, don't give a damn about any of those black lives because they are killed by other blacks. But that is the reality of urban street crime today. The face of urban street crime, drive-by shootings, robberies, it's overwhelmingly black and brown, and that's why we're trying to hide it away and pretend that it's not a problem.
And then you got these crazy judges. One, they don't have enough power. When they do not put the bail in that the DA recommends. It's Judge Eugene Bowen. He's featured in the New York Post today. This guy's a huge problem. He keeps letting these people out, and you have the problem, too, with, now Detective Diller being taken out by a guy that's been arrested 12 times. The driver's up to 21 or vice versa. They could do two jail stints. They don't go back. What about these judges when they let these guys out and they commit other crimes?
Well, again, it's just the same reason. They all believe they're doing racial justice. This is all driven by race. What has to happen, Brian, is we have to say we're not going to be cowed by the racial hustle any longer. We are not going to allow our criminal standards to be torn down because they have a disparate impact on blacks. We're not going to allow our academic meritocratic standards of how you credentialize a doctor, how you admit students into medical school, how you credentialize an engineer. We are not going to cave into the racial hustle. We are going to maintain our standards. We're going to be colorblind. We're going to be lawful and constitutional. And we're not going to accept the phony charge for one more minute that America today is a white supremacist country.
No one believes that, at least it's not a politician with a microphone. What about the gangsters that are coming in from Venezuela and from down south? People say that's biased. That's a fact. They're coming in. They're proud of it. They're here to start taking over. They're going to be fighting with our gangs.
Bias? It's just stunning, Brian, the ability to deny the reality. These are real crimes that have been committed. If you don't want to be accused as like a group of committing crimes, don't commit the damn crimes. You know, that's very easy. We are not making these things up. These people, it's like a return of the El Salvador MS-13. They are very violent. They're very vicious. They have no respect for life. And yes, it's going to turn into, it'll be sort of interesting. One wants to put everybody in a coliseum, you know, seal it off and let them kill each other off. It's a lot more efficient. I don't know why the police continue even bothering. You know, if people tell them, oh, they're racist, they should just say, okay, we're out of here. You know, take care of yourselves. And the reason that they don't do that is because they know that there are good law-abiding people in those communities who do support them, and the cops work their hearts out for those people, even as they're getting the resistance of arrest, which resulted in the Jonathan Diller tragic assassination. Our police officer on March 25th doing a car stop, doing proactive policing, which is so dangerous now and is so vilified. But the police continue doing their jobs in the face of a president that calls them racist and the Democratic establishment that does.
And here is his widow speaking out on exactly what you're saying, Heather McDonald.
It's been 2 years and 2 months since Detective Rivera and Detective Mora made the ultimate sacrifice, just like my husband, Jonathan Diller. Dominique Rivera stood in front of all the elected officials present today pleading for change. That change never came. And now my son will grow up without his father. I will grow old without my husband. And his parents have to say goodbye to their child. How many more police officers and how many more families need to make the ultimate sacrifice before we start protecting them?
You asked that same question.
It's absolutely heart-wrenching. Any politician that is doing anything other than fight crime right now is a complete failure. He is violating his oath. The purpose of government is to protect property, people, and lives. Nothing else matters. Mayor Adams knows that every day there will be hundreds of law-abiding businesses whose property is attacked and stolen. That is a mathematical certainty. He is complicit in those crimes if he is not putting all of his resources to protect the people who bring us commerce, who allow us to lead our lives with goods, with services. This is not acceptable.
I hear you. Heather McDonald, thanks so much for speaking so clearly on something. It's not as complex when we hear from you. Thank you, Heather.
Thank you, Brian.
You got a 1-866-408-7669. We're going to come back and take your calls. Bob the Hour, we're going to be joined by someone who wants to be the next senator from Wisconsin. It's a critical state. It's a critical race. It is Eric Hovde will be with us from Wisconsin. He's a GOP Senate candidate. Right now, he's trailing Tammy Baldwin by 3. Kenny closes that gap. Of course, we'll hear his mission in a moment.
Giving you everything you need to know. You're with Brian Kilmeade. Information you want. Truth you demand. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
And this is why Imam Khomeini, who declared the International Day of Quds, this is why he would say to pour all of your chants and all of your shouts upon the head of America.
Death to America. You like that? That was Tariq Bazzi from Dearborn, Michigan. You don't know him either. Neither do I. Just know this. He's speaking out on Al-Quds Day, a day that should not be celebrated in America. That is a lethal fighting force within Iran. Thankfully, some of their higher-ups were taken out. First Soleimani from us, and then last week, they took out some higher-ups in Syria, and both the U.S. and Israel expecting retaliation for that, but also is freaking out Iran because they have some militants within their country who darn happy with the government taking over their military bases. And then they can obviously see that the intelligence the Israelis have displayed gets them right with the Al-Quds Force higher-ups, who is in charge of getting Hezbollah the weapons they need. He is now dead, sure to be replaced, but knocks him off kilter. And they know if they hit back in Israel, the hit from Israel will be even greater. That's what I thought we understood as a country. Even though there are civilians that die when you go into a place as dense as Gaza, if you as a country can't back up your ally in these times, I think that you really are not much of a friend. And the message is sent to Taiwan. It's sent to Ukraine. Wow. Are you going to turn on Israel? What will you do to us? I want you to hear what Sarah Isker played, said. Cut 16.
The Hamas side has rejected the six-week ceasefires that have been offered time and time again by Israel. Offer a simple ceasefire. Return all of the hostages. They actually hold 133 in exchange for a ceasefire. Because you know what? Hamas will either reject it or they will violate it immediately. Because don't forget, there was a ceasefire on October 6th. This is the problem. This isn't like 9/11. They are holding Israelis. They're holding Americans, for that matter. So, yes, Israel is going to keep prosecuting that war until every single one of those people are home. And that 47-minute video that they have of what Hamas did on October 7th is something that, frankly, Americans shouldn't have to watch. But maybe they need a reminder for what happened that day, because it wasn't.
So Sarah Isker had to level out that whole panel and the rest of the Sunday shows. And she's not a pro-Trumper. She's pro-American alliances. And remember how we got there. Why is that so hard?
From his mouth to your ears, it's Brian Kilmeade.
And a man who's doing really good. USA, he's just about even in the polls. I see it. He's a handsome devil. I just met him backstage. And a beautiful wife, a beautiful family. U.S. Senate candidate, Eric Hovde. Eric Hovde. Where's Eric? Eric, good job. Man, I tell you, I met Eric and I've studied Eric and because we have to get it right. And running against some very fine people, really. But I've looked it out and they're going to have other opportunities. Eric, I am giving you my complete and total endorsement. So go out and win. Go out and win.
Now, that was President Trump giving Eric Hovde his endorsement, obviously, and he joins us now. Eric, welcome to the Brian Kilmeade Show.
Brian, it's great being on your show, and I hope all your listeners are having a wonderful day.
I hope so, too. Everyone's focused on the eclipse and having some fun, kind of a unifying moment. But in the meantime, back to action with us. You're Tammy Baldwin, it leads you by about three, so within the margin of error on the Hill-Emerson poll. And that was just on the 18th when that was done. How do you close the gap?
Well, I was only in the race for a little over a month at that point in time the poll was taken. So how do I close the gap? Is I point out that she is one of the most progressive liberals that votes with Joe Biden 95.5% of the time. All her policies, her and Biden's policies, have been destructive for the American people and the people of Wisconsin. They've created the highest inflation rate in the last 40 years. They've opened our borders. They fueled the fentanyl crisis. She supported Joe Biden on the Iran deal and supported President Obama. I mean, just everything she votes for and stands with is fundamentally wrong and has only made America worse.
And the one thing that's happened to close the gap in a lot of these races is the abortion ban. Since it's Dobbs' decision, the pro-choice movement has been able to make a real impact in a lot of races. How do you plan on verbalizing your stance on abortion?
Well, I actually verbalized my stance over a month ago, and that is I believe the voters of the state of Wisconsin should decide this through a referendum. And everybody will have their right to vote. I'll have my right to vote, and my one vote will count like everybody else's. Look, I believe in the beauty of life. I have two daughters. I have three grandchildren. And I also believe in exceptions for, you know, rape, incest, and the life of the mother. I think there's a reasonable time in a pregnancy for a woman to decide. But where the Democrats and Senator Baldwin are, it's just unconscionable. They will allow a healthy baby that can be born alive to be terminated, even up to the point of delivery. And that is just so fundamentally wrong. It's immoral in my view. But I was where President Trump was before he made his announcement. I think it has to go to the people of the state of Wisconsin.
All right, here's what Trump said a couple hours ago. Cut six.
My view is now that we have abortion where everybody wanted it from a legal standpoint, the states will determine by vote or legislation or perhaps both, and whatever they decide must be the law of the land, in this case, the law of the state. Many states will be different. Many will have a different number of weeks, or some will have more conservative than others, and that's what they will be. At the end of the day, this is all about the will of the people. You must follow your heart or, in many cases, your religion or your faith.
So what do you think he solved with that statement?
Well, I think it is what the Supreme Court ruled, that we as a country need to come and decide this, and so it's no longer such a divisive issue. Look, Western Europe has resolved this issue a long time ago. Most Western European countries are between, you know, 10 to 14 weeks, the first trimester. I think Germany's at 12. I think France is at 14. And I think it's taking it out, having the courts decide, or having what President Biden or Senator Baldwin, which is basically wanting the federal government to mandate that abortions can happen up to the point of delivery and for taxpayers to foot the bill for that. And I think that is fundamentally wrong. And so, I think there's a reasonable time that people can work up.
So Lindsey Graham not happy with that. He says Senator Graham expressed his strong disagreement with Donald Trump over his opposition to a national ban on Monday, predicting the Trump position will age as well as the Dred Scott decision, which did not age well, if case keeping score at home when it comes to slavery. He says many states will be different, but he says for Trump to come out against any kind of nationally enforced abortion restriction is a mistake. The side must be the law of the land, and in this case, the law of the state. He wants it to be a 15-week ban after 15 weeks and just end this conversation.
Yeah, I mean, he has his view. The courts have put it back to the states. That's very clear, and it's advancing in some states. Look, it's unfortunate. You have a state like Minnesota where they have allowed with what Senator Baldwin and Joe Biden have pushed for, and that's unlimited abortions. Wisconsin, I don't think we will go anywhere near there. As President Trump stated, some states, Florida has 6 weeks, other states have, you know, a broader period of time. I do think we have to, reconcile this as voters in this country. And again, mm-hmm. I just think where the left is today is so out beyond what is reasonable right. and rational, where a healthy baby that can be born alive can be terminated up to the point of delivery and for taxpayers.
And you extrapolate that out because there's no end. Like, no, they don't come out and say you should be able to terminate a pregnancy at any point. But unless you come out and say what the point is, you could only assume that is what you're saying.
Yes.
Gotcha.
Yes. And when they're asked, what restrictions are you willing to put? They say nothing. I mean, they're silent on it. And I think, you know, the more the media can hold them accountable, or do you really agree with a child that can be born up to the point of delivery can be terminated?
Right.
And they just try to run from that issue. And they've used their people in the press to constantly attack Republicans. I think it's time to push back against them.
Eric Hovde, our guest, he is the Republican nominee to try to take Tammy Baldwin's slot in the Senate. So, Eric, where right now is Wisconsin on abortion?
You know, I haven't seen the latest poll numbers, but the vast majority of Republicans, independents, and even Democrats believe that abortion should not go into the second or third trimester or shouldn't go up to the point of delivery. So I think where it'll probably end up is some point in the first trimester would be my best guess. But I haven't seen any of the recent polling numbers on this.
So just real quick, where you stand internationally, you see what's going on right now. It seems as though the President of the United States and many others are starting to abandon Israel because of the death of the humanitarian workers that lost their lives last week in a mistake drone hit. Your stance on Israel 6 months in?
Look, Israel is the only democracy in the Middle East, and I think it's very important for people to understand this is really not as much as a conflict between Israel and Hamas. Clearly it is, but the bigger player is Iran. Hamas would have never struck, Hezbollah would never struck without Iran's backing. They control financially and organizationally both of those organizations. We have a very geopolitical battle going on in the Middle East. Iran used the attack because what did it do? It hit its three greatest enemies, the United States, Israel, and the Saudis, because the Saudis were getting ready to normalize relationships with Israel through the Abrams Accord that President Trump negotiated. So the reality of it is we are in a geopolitical battle. Obviously, Russia is backing Iran, probably China to some degree as well. So we have to understand the context of what's going on. You have to allow Israel to defend themselves and protect their borders. Look, in war, which is why you always have to try to get to peace as fast and possible as you can. But in war, unfortunate casualties happen, and it's devastating when you see something like what happened with humanitarian workers getting killed. It is, you know, heartbreaking and very unfortunate.
So Wisconsin, as you know, the primary was already a done deal. But tell me how important you think this is. Wisconsin's primary elections on April 2nd, nearly 119,000 Republicans voted for a GOP candidate other than Trump, and 48,000 Democratic voters chose uninstructed instead of Biden. But on the Trump watch, tell us what's happening in Wisconsin, such a vital state, but hard to figure out and categorize. What should you take away from the 119,000?
Well, look, with President Trump, there were other options, other candidates, even though it was very clear he's already wrapped up the nomination. With President Biden, there was nobody there. So it was purely a protest vote, where on the Republican side, it was a preference vote. Look, I think Wisconsin is right now, if it was held today, I think President Trump would win, because look what inflation has done to the people of Wisconsin. It has been very hard on the people of Wisconsin, like everybody in our country. I mean, look at the price of beef, look at the price of butter or you know, eggs, you name it. Look what's happening on our southern border. Every state is now a border state.
No, I hear you, but that should play into Trump's strengths. Even his enemies would say that.
100%. Oh, if you're asking what will happen with go ahead, Brian.
With the 119,000 Republicans who did not vote for Trump in Wisconsin, what message should they take? If he says, hey, what's going on with Wisconsin? Eric, you know it better than I know it. If he says that to you, what would you tell him?
I would say in Wisconsin, there's a term, Wisconsin nice. President Trump is a New York developer, you know, brass knuckles guy. When you're in Wisconsin, people like nice. So President Trump lost the state by 20,000 votes. But our congressional delegation, we have more Republicans than Democrats, and our state Senate and our assembly are heavily Republican. There is a group of voters that, you know, do not prefer President Trump's style, is probably the best way I could say it.
Understood. So what do you do? Do you court Nikki Haley and say her, see if you could get that, Nikki Haley's endorsement?
You mean for me or for President
Trump? For President Trump.
You know, I think the more he can bring the party together, the better. I don't think he should be attacking other Republicans. Look, I'm a Ronald Reagan Republican. I believe in the broad tent theory. And I believe you bring as many people into our party as possible. So I think the more President Trump can try to unite our party, the better.
Gotcha. Eric, best of luck. It's going to be a tight fight, and you're going to have to run a very unique race to win over the people, the nice people of Wisconsin. Eric Hovde, thank you. Congratulations on the nomination. Best of luck in the sprint.
Thanks so much, Brian. I hope you have a wonderful day.
You too. Yeah, what a nice thing to say. He fits right in. Back in a moment.
Learning something new every day on The Brian Kilmeade Show. A talk show that's real. This is The Brian Kilmeade Show.
The reason why there might be a deal in the offing now to release the hostages is because the Biden administration is finally putting real pressure on the Netanyahu government. And we see what pressure actually does do. It opens the gates to more aid to the Gaza Strip. It produces a possible hostage deal. American pressure does work. And we're seeing that happen now in real time.
Ed Lucey of the Financial Times. He thinks America putting pressure on Israel is the problem. How about America puts pressure on Hamas and the Palestinians? Do you know Hamas has basically arrested four higher-ups in the Palestinian Authority? Those are the people that we've identified as people who are going to build the future Palestinian state. Nobody wants a state on the Palestinian side. And the people with the power, Hamas, laugh at Fatah and the Palestinian Authority. But you think Israel getting pressure will solve anything? As long as there's a brigade of two of Hamas fighters, nothing gets solved. They were the ones who were massacred. They didn't pull us back in Fallujah. They didn't pull us back in Ramadi. Even though there was times in which civilians were killed and apologies had to be sent off. But all you saw over the weekend was more and more people hassling Obama officials or others or Israeli officials about what happened with the humanitarian workers in the central kitchen. Tragedy, no doubt about it. But for a chef to come out and say IDF did it on purpose, as influential as he is and as special as he is as a person, he knows nothing about the military, and there is no way they targeted a humanitarian convoy. It doesn't even work to their advantage if they did disdain people delivering food to them. If you want to get the tone of the Sunday shows, listen to this exchange. Now, John Kirby does not want to go to bat for Israel, but the attacks are so ridiculous for Margaret Brennan. Cut 12.
So the president is
considering withholding, conditioning, doing anything here? Because for 6 months now, we have been hearing complaints like this. Humanitarians on this program telling us what's happening.
Look, again, we see it ourselves. We're not blind to the risk that the aid workers are in, certainly not blind to the suffering that the people of Gaza are going through. And the president, again, was clear. I won't get ahead of him, Margaret. I won't prejudge decisions he will or won't make.
I haven't heard from him on this. If he feels so strongly, why isn't the president out there talking about this?
You saw his statement after call with the prime minister, and he will continue to talk to the American people and the members of Congress about what we're doing and what we're not doing.
Do you hear the disdain? Now, Kirby doesn't want to fight for the Israelis. They want to take the position that being tough on Israel to stop the protesters from stopping. Do you know the president of the United States had to take a different path to church because it was blocked by the protesters? If you want to know the problem, I said this before, and I said it on Saturday night on One Nation. The president doesn't speak to the press, and for some reason, the press doesn't mind. I mind. Go ahead and do an interview with somebody besides Al Roker. Here's Alex Burns. He pointed this out, too. Cut 15.
When you look at the president meeting behind closed doors with Muslim leaders or behind closed doors or in private phone calls with Israeli officials, that may serve a purpose for policy reasons. It clearly did this week, his conversation with Prime Minister Netanyahu. He doesn't talk to the whole country very often about this. He doesn't talk to the whole country very often about the war in Ukraine either. And I think what you do see in this electorate is Americans looking around the world. They're seeing chaos. They're seeing disorder. They're seeing this horrific violence against humanitarian aid workers and civilians. And they don't have a president who's doing a whole lot to help them make sense of it.
Right. And I've been saying that from day one. Why should Lindsey Graham and Michael Waltz and General Jack Keane define why we need aid into Ukraine when the president of the United States slow walks everything, doesn't even bring up the mission or what the end looks like? Instead, he leaves it to other people to go to bat, and they're tired of it, especially because if you go to bat for the president's mission in Ukraine, you have to back the president's tactics. And that's condemning Ukraine when they blow up an oil field in Russia because it goes beyond the borders. Them going up and blowing up a power grid because it goes out beyond the borders. And not getting them attack-ems or F-16s, slow-walking HIMARS. Hey, April 27th, it's coming up quick. BrianKilmeade.com. History, liberty, and laughs. Go get your tickets.
Kudlow on Fox Business is now on the go for podcast fans. Get key interviews with the biggest business newsmakers of the day. The Kudlow podcast will be available on the go after the show every weekday at foxbusinesspodcasts.com or wherever you download your favorite podcasts. Listen to the show ad-free on Fox News Podcast Plus, on Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music with your Prime membership, or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.